go.
Thanks for listening. I'm in like. All right.
Yeah. No, I
All right. Well, welcome to Tear Gas and Gumdrops, the podcast about the pain and sweetness of ministry and mission. What are you giggling about?
Every time we say our name, I say, welcome to Tear Gas and Gumdrops, the podcast about candy and crowd control.
Because those things have a lot to give. I tried to send you like a Tear Gas and Gumdrops emoji. Did you just see that?
Is that what that is?
So that's the best I could come up with was like the crying face and then a cloud. Like, that's pretty obvious, right? Tear gas.
Oh, I get it.
And the only thing that was remotely gumdrop shaped is the poop face.
So there's, yeah, that's why I was confused by it. So no, I didn't get that.
No.
They need a gumdrop emoji.
They do. They do.
And a tear gas emoji.
Yeah, we
need anyway.
We need to fight for that. Well, hey, shall we just jump into it?
Yeah, this is going to be the first podcast. You're Chris, I'm Kyle. This is season two. They know us by now.
Yeah, yeah.
So here we go. Yeah, let's jump.
I'm going to throw some words out at you, and tell me what you think of when you hear these words, okay?
Gotcha. Here we go.
Okay, Christendom.
You mean Christendom?
Christendom. Do you say that T? I don't know. Christendom. What do you think of when you hear that?
I think Hauerwas.
How would you define that's a that's
yeah, he wrote Resident Aliens.
Yeah,
Christendom is the man, I'm gonna screw this up now that I'm on the spot. Christendom is the word that refers to the time period following Constantine and perhaps ending 20 years ago, where Christianity was the main power of the Western culture.
It's pretty good, pretty good. What about so then here's I'll send you an easy one then.
Okay.
There's a sports word there, but I forgot it. Slow ball, lobule, I don't know sport. Post Christendom.
Well, that would be the phase of time that some would argue we are currently in, where Christianity is no longer the main power, if you will, the main way people decide values and worldview, behaviors, et cetera, et cetera.
Cultural force.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's not that it's gone, but the world has kind of moved on. Okay, here's the last one. Civic religion.
That one I don't think I could do well.
Okay. I'll throw one out there and you tell me if you think that like this is a thing and it makes sense. I would define civic religion as it's very related to Christendom. However, you can have it in any culture, whether it's a Christian culture or not. And civic religion is basically kind of a religiousized, sacramentalized way of life, practices, things that are valued as a culture. Sometimes they're valued officially, sometimes they're valued in kind of a sentimental way. And they're pushed through the official and unofficial institutions.
Okay,
so like an example of civic religion then would be anything from a courthouse with the Ten Commandments posted to an organization like the Boy Scouts that would push specifically biblical terminology and ideals. So these are things that are not the church, but are thing, you know, it pushing kind of a religious agenda. Now, what's interesting, though, is here's another example of civic religion. How about Sharia law?
Ooh.
Okay, so here
we're getting real up in here.
Okay, so Sharia law, and I'm going to mess this up, but Sharia law is a kind of pseudo-canonical set of laws that is accepted by some Muslims, and in some countries, Sharia law is enforced. And that's where you see groups like in Afghanistan, forcing women to dress certain ways.
Right.
You know, that's an example of civic religion. You have the religious organizations kind of setting the tone, but also legal organizations setting the tone for that.
Gotcha.
So that interacts with Christendom and post-Christendom, but not the same thing. It should also be said that some things are civic religion that are not overtly Christian. Like, for instance, maybe getting Christmas off or getting Thanksgiving off as a holiday enforced by the government, that's an act of civic religion.
Mm.
You know, even though... yeah, anyway. So, okay, here's why I wanted to throw all that out there. There's a lot going on in our polarized discourse right now. Around just different issues that pushes up against what I think, and obviously we've talked about this on the podcast before, but what I think used to be and what is now.
Yeah.
So basically here's my whole pitch for this whole conversation. There used to be a time where Christendom was the civic religion of America. Okay, so there used to be an expectation in America of a certain level of biblical knowledge and Christian undertones to organizations. And as we have, you know, grown as a country and things have changed, technology has changed, we've become more aware of other organizations, we've become more pluralistic. Just the way that people think about the world, the kind of philosophical underpinnings of our culture has changed. We've moved away from that. And a lot of the angry, polarized discourse we have right now is between people who are kind of living basically in two different time periods, maybe you could say. But people who are kind of fighting for that American civic Christianity. That fits in that older Christendom mindset. And then voices who are kind of carving out a new civic religion that it attempts to be that attempts to be separate from Christianity. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah, I think that makes sense to me. I think I can get behind that train.
Can you say it in a simpler way than I just did?
There are some people who wish that we allowed the Bible to shape our national values and our American culture. And there is more and more the reality that that is no longer happening.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, and I think... I think it's kind of a natural expression of the melting pot that is America.
Right, right.
That when you allow, and there's nothing wrong with this, mm-hmm. per se, but when you allow multiple worldviews to live in the same space in the same nation,
mm-hmm.
that those worldviews are going to clash. And as we have become more and more of a nation of ethnicities,
mm-hmm.
And as kind of younger generations have grown up outside of the church,
yeah.
and outside of the Christian culture, it's just a very logical flow that would then begin to shape American politics.
Yeah.
Because those people are becoming politicians.
Yeah. To make it super practical or obvious, like there was a time where, so America's a nation of immigrants, right? We've always been a nation of immigrants. There was a time where most of those immigrants came from Christendom cultures. Okay. So they were coming from a place where the national religion was a form of Christianity.
Right.
And two things have changed. One is that a lot of those people who came out of those cultures only hold on to kind of the cultural side of the faith, you know? So they might go to, if they're Italian, they might go to church on Christmas and Easter, but that
right.
identity as Catholic is gone, you know? So
right.
same for Irish, you know?
Yeah.
Things like that. So that's
Jewish.
One Jewish. Oh yeah. No, exactly. It's not just Christian. So, you know, there's a time where there was a really strong Jewish cultural identity, especially in New York, and that was somewhat religious. Now, I would say that, like Jewish specifically, there's still a really strong Jewish identity. I think there are. I read somewhere more Jews in New York than in Israel. And so
that wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, so there's still that identity, but it's more of a cultural identity than it is necessarily a religious one. I think that's a great example. Okay, so I'm going to posit this. Like, some of the big frustrations and anger that we're having and seeing in the media and seeing in politics and even our churches are these two groups fighting against each other. Now, here's where we're going to be a little risky, Kyle. You want to give an example? Without stepping on any toes.
Without stepping on any toes. Man, I don't know if there's a way to do that. Well, okay, so let's say gay rights.
Okay.
That could be argued as an example of... that might actually be the first example where I became kind of aware of that.
Okay. Tell me what you mean.
Well, that the traditional Judeo-Christian value that homosexuality is wrong, has now been, for lack of a better word, trumped by a belief that all people should be free to do, you know, to be happy.
Yeah.
And so it's no longer illegal in numerous states, and I'm pretty sure federally, for gays and lesbians to be married to their partners.
Yeah, I'll throw one out there. I'll be risky. You know what didn't exist in 33 AD?
Phones.
That's cars. One thing. Cars. How about
bull mastiffs?
How about yes? how about guns?
Ooh, guns.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there is literally no way.
Also, Islam did not exist in 33. Yeah.
Okay. Ooh, perfect. There's literally no way that Jesus could have been pro-gun or anti-Islam because neither of those things existed in 33 AD.
It's valid. He also could not have been anti-gun or pro-Islam.
Exactly. Exactly. But you have groups that identify themselves as Christian, that lock onto certain issues. And I would say that they are Christian in the sense that they are part of that old school American civic Christianity. So they aren't Christian in the sense of Jesus, but they're Christian in the sense of they come out of that old American Christendom.
Right.
Does that make sense?
No. I can see the connection and the link between the two. And maybe some of that is because you see that more in the Republican Party than you do in the Democratic Party. At least that's the narrative I feel like is shared.
Right.
Is that the more conservative side is very pro Second Amendment, very pro gun, and not to say it's right or wrong.
Right.
Because that's not what this podcast is about. but definitely there is there, and it feels like that dialogue has become more heated and more. More unhealthy as the years have gone on. Here's a great example. A friend posted a picture about, well, I'm not going to say what it was about because it just happened this week. But there's a picture on Facebook, and I asked a question, and then someone else, who I don't know, gave a somewhat I believe to be a snarky remark, to which I then clarified my question. To which that person then said I was being naive, to which I then said, if you want to talk about this like adults, we can, but calling me naive or asking questions is not healthy.
Oof.
To which he then said, sorry, I hurt your feelings, little buddy. That's just what all liberals say.
Ooh.
And I was just reflecting. And so then I responded with
little buddy.
Right. You know, got that, like, ooh. just reflecting on that conversation of the fact that he feels like sarcasm it belongs in a discussion. And we see that all the time on Facebook and social media, that we make these snarky memes, and I do it, I'm guilty of it. We make these snarky memes that instead of providing an intellectual dialogue, it just kind of puts down the other side. And that's become increasingly popular. And that's probably why we have the Trump phenomenon right now.
Yeah. So there's this idea that if I'm right, if I'm correct, then I have then I have the authorization to act in any way I want. I'm actually going to, I'll go ahead and give an example. We can link to this in the show notes, but, Zach Hunt wrote an article for Huffington Post, which he gave the great clickbait headline, "Are we finally witnessing the death of Christianity in America?" And in this, he talks about a specific incident recently at a Christian college. And he just, he's kind of where someone said some things that are kind of offensive and seem to many even dangerous. And he said that, do we give people like this the get out of acting like Jesus card? So you can call yourself a Christian, but let me read this. "Sadly, we live in a strange place and time where it seems that publicly assenting to the right dogma is some sort of sanctified get out of living like Jesus card. So I have the right ideas. I have the right beliefs that allows me to be a jerk, or maybe even that allows me, as we see, maybe this is going out of limb, but I don't think so, that allows me to go shoot up an abortion clinic."
Right.
You know, because I believe the right things about abortion, it gets me out of the thou shalt not kill clause of Christianity and Judaism.
Right. But we also have, on the flip side of that, when I was reading an article last week, about, man, I cannot tell you the name of the article or even who wrote it, but the author was talking about how they had presented this information in kind of a debate, and they were not trying to be mean. They weren't even trying to be a jerk, but there was such a visceral negative reaction that they were painted as a racist or as a hate monger. And so there's I guess these are extremes perhaps. Some people just act like jerks and they think they feel justified in being unchristlike in the name of Jesus. Whereas other people are too sensitive, because if you don't agree with me, then you must be a person of hate, because clearly I am the way of love. And so we have these kind of, and they're becoming more common. They're not even, I don't think they're too extremes. I think they're becoming the norms on the opposite sides of the aisle.
Yeah.
Which concern, both aspects, I think, concern me.
No, that's really important to say, because we don't want to just hate on some people on the right wing for acting this way. I would go as far as even saying the word bigot is about the most useless and dangerous word in this conversation, in these conversations. Now, is some of the behavior of some of these people, like say Westboro Baptist Church, and their sign, their offensive signs and things that they do, could you call that bigoted? Yes. But as soon as you just start throwing that word around, you effectively ended any conversation.
Right.
And it's the same thing. It's the same problem that, you know, we might be blaming others at. It is acting offensively because you think you have the right dogma.
Right. Right. No, I completely agree. And that's on, you know, I think we're talking on very big, broad scales right now. I think it's also in very small ways. Mm-hmm. We can justify gossip. We can justify insults. We can justify
straight
hatred.
Straight up slander and hatred. Yeah.
Slander, all because this person is doing something that I disagree with. Ultimately, it's just I disagree with, but I feel like because I'm right, well, then I can talk about them and act in unChrist-like ways. It's the age-old, you know, it's the Southern joke, is you can say, bless their heart.
Right.
Or I have a prayer request.
Right.
Right. So this isn't a new thing. I think it's just becoming a more culturally prevalent thing.
Okay. And it's becoming increasingly awkward. I want to transition into that.
Yeah.
Because... Yeah. Here's the thing. There is an argument to be made that there are some groups with certain agendas who may have agendas that go against some Christian beliefs or some Christendom beliefs. Their agenda may go against that, but their behavior is sometimes more in line with Christian faith, or at least that's where the conversation seems to be headed.
Yeah.
And I don't think this is the most part. I'm just talking about what seems to be the larger conversation. For instance, you know, over the past, with the election cycle and with the dangerous things happening in Syria and the refugee crisis, anytime there's a refugee crisis, that sets off some xenophobia. This is not a new problem. This is a human problem. And you get people talking about groups of people in really offensive ways. And what I've noticed,
very broad ways.
And so this is what I've noticed. And tell me if I'm off on this, but it seems to me that you have a handful of voices that claim to be Christian, saying really insulting things. And the end result is that there is this huge groundswell of support and sympathy for Muslims. Suddenly, the people who support Muslims and the Muslims then are cast in a really positive light. They're the ones who are in need. They're the ones who are in need of pity. And the Christians are cast in the light of being hateful, hurtful, even dangerous.
Right.
Now, here's where things get tricky. There was a recent article about Mark Zuckerberg. Can you just really quickly tell us about what started the article and...
So the article was Zuckerberg is donating $45 billion or something. You know, 99% of Facebook's
of his shares
of Facebook to his foundation to research and make things better, which is great and wonderful. I don't think it's as altruistic as the article that I read.
Right.
Made it out to be, but I think some people perceive it as very, you know, hugely humanitarian. There's a huge amount of money going into research. I don't know. All I know is the research side of it.
Right.
I think we could argue the point that just researching something isn't as helpful as other things, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah. But what's interesting, the title of the article is Christianity, Morality, and Mark Zuckerberg's Enormous Generosity. It appeared in The Week and by a guy named Pascal Emmanuel Gobry. And here was
great
his
name, by
yeah,
the way.
Fantastic name. Pascal Emmanuel. Man, that's awesome. Here's how I'll summarize it. Basically, what he's talking about is that What Zuckerberg did doesn't make logical sense. Even if he's still there's some less altruistic stuff, it still doesn't make sense. He should be spending that money on yachts and maybe a private island or something like that.
Yeah.
And the guy's argument, Gobry's argument here is that what is motivating Zuckerberg is this kind of leftover tinge of Christianity that outside of the story of Jesus that people aren't generous like that way. And it's only from the sacrifice of Jesus that we learn that. And that idea of altruism as the highest value is deep in our culture. And the Zuckerberg is not a Christian, but he is acting based out of, I guess I would call it a vocabulary that is innately Christian.
Right.
And then he kind of turns it on its head again, and he basically says that this makes it harder to be Christian, because here's this altruistic effort. What makes Christians, followers of Jesus, better or different than the world around them when you've got dudes giving away their fortunes, basically? Yeah. How does the church respond to that? I thought it was a fascinating question. What did you think?
I thought it was a really great question. I don't know my church history well enough to know how different the early, well, maybe it's not church history, maybe it's just ancient cultures.
Right.
I don't know how different the early church was in comparison to ancient cultures. What little I have read about it, it definitely seems to be I don't know if demonstratively is the right word here, but it definitely seems to be extremely different, not just in terms of rituals, but in terms of lifestyle and in terms of practice. Of course, those books were by Christian scholars. So,
right. Well, there is some good work that's not by a Christian scholar. Are you familiar with any of Rodney Stark's stuff?
I'm not.
Okay. He's a guy, he's a secular historian. He wrote a book called The Rise of Christianity, where he traces the first 300 years of Christianity and kind of asks the question, how does this go from being an obscure sect within Judaism to really kind of having this broad influence over the whole Roman Empire? And he starts, you know, in Acts with stories like people selling their property and giving everything up for each other. But he gets into some really specific things. So the way that one way that some in ancient Rome and in ancient Roman Empire would have handled out of wedlock children or children that they couldn't afford or didn't want was infanticide. And the practice of infanticide was to leave a newborn baby, mostly baby girls, at the local trash dump. So by the way, when Jesus talks about Sheol, what we call hell, that burning, smoldering dump on the edge of town, that's one of the places where people would...
That's Gehenna.
Oh, yes, Gehenna. Sorry, Sheol's other thing. But anyway, so people would leave the babies there. And one of the practices of early Christians was to get up before dawn and go to the dump and listen for crying babies. And they would take these girls in and raise them as their own. And Stark's, one of his theses of how the church exploded in the first three centuries was there came a point where if you wanted to meet girls, you had to go to church.
Fair enough.
Because they had rescued so many baby girls. That's just one example.
Still sort of true. You know, at least 50 years ago.
It's one of my favorite stories of all time. And
and you know, there's a modern day parallel.
Uh-huh.
There is a Korean pastor
who has
a baby drop off box.
Yeah.
In his church, and so he runs this orphanages because in one of the Koreas, you know, abortion is illegal, I think. And so moms were just kind of leaving their children. I think that it was very similar to what was happening in Rome. And so he created this like mailbox thing that's worn. It's basically an incubator and he checks it every day and people can take their children there if they don't want them. So it's a very similar sounding story.
It's innately Christian.
It's innately Christian and it's crazy loving. It's crazy love, I think. It's extreme love, you could say. And when I was reading the Zuckerberg article, not to question motives.
Sure.
But is that, you know, maybe it's using the language.
Right.
But is it the heart? Because he's still got like billions of dollars remaining. It's not like, it's not that the article was Mark Zuckerberg gave away everything and moved to Calcutta to work with homeless people. Right. It's Mark Zuckerberg gave $45 billion of a, you know, he still got like $3 billion left. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, I get it, but it also doesn't seem, as insanely sacrificial as what I think about when I think of Christian love.
Right. Okay. You know? So we'll transition.
Maybe I'm jumping the gun in the conversation.
I think that's good. I think we'll transition to that in a second. I would just summarize as this. What the problem is that the loudest voices in our culture right now that call themselves Christians are doing things that rub up against sometimes obvious, sometimes obvious, sometimes not, but rub up against what our culture calls generous, loving, graceful.
Let me play devil's advocate.
Okay.
Is it that the loudest voices are those voices, or is it that the narrative,
right,
that the in the death of Christendom,
right,
you're going to pursue, because it's kind of a cliche thing now, the idea of Christian hypocrisy, starting in the early 2000s when we really started a huge PR problem with what happened in the Catholic Church. Not to say that should have been kept quiet. I'm glad that got out. I hope that got stopped. But it did begin to create this mistrust, and it began it gave force to this narrative of this story isn't really what it says it is, and these people really aren't what they say they are. And so every time a Christian, or at least someone who claims to be a Christian, says something stupid, that becomes the narrative that is sold.
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily know if they're the loudest voice. They're just the voice that's getting the most air.
Right, right. Okay. And that is the problem. And the problem is compounded by things that look obviously loving, look obviously generous, are in a narrative that puts them up against. And so here's another great example. As soon as the Supreme Court passed the resolution that anybody in America could get married, what was the hashtag? The hashtag was hashtag love wins. Everyone.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so now what we're saying, this is in the broader cultural conversation, is that if you believe in love, if you value love,
right,
then you support this. And it's saying anyone who doesn't agree with this statement doesn't believe in love. Like, how do you have a conversation when that is?
Or even in abortion.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, we may need to make this a 2-part podcast. It feels like, but cause right now I think we're talking about kind of how rhetoric works in society.
Mm-hmm.
But think about the abortion discussion. More often than not, the rhetoric is if you are for abortion, conservative Christian response is, well, then you're pro murder. Whereas, if you're from the liberal side and you're fighting for abortion, then it's a women's health issue. It's a woman's right. And so all of a sudden, you lose the sense to dialogue that because either you're a murderer or you hate women's freedom.
right.
And that's the rhetoric. Like we get so often kind of stuck in the rhetoric that the nuance of either side can never really come out, because then we have to defend our, well, I'm not, whoa, hold on. I love women, or I think they should have rights, or whoa, 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 I don't want to be a murderer.
Like, right. Right. I'm not a murderer. I've never killed anyone.
Yeah. Not lately.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, I think we can do this in our allotted time because I'm going to push us forward right here. So, the conversation, the rhetoric is dangerous, is and awkward, and but it does force a response,
Yeah.
and that was kind of the guy's point here, is that it's going to force Christians to have a to do something besides make noise, to represent the way of Jesus in a way that is both pulls out of the rhetoric and at the same time is decisively different than humanistic altruism, even
Yeah.
when that altruism is informed by Christian language.
Right. And it's, N.T. Wright makes a really great point in one of his books. He calls it the myth of progress. Maybe
Right.
it's in Surprised by Hope. Actually, it
Right.
might be in Simply Good News, that this idea that we are getting better
Right.
as a culture. Like, well, I think we're improving technologically, but that doesn't make us better people. So we have to
Right.
find a way. I think that plays into this because our story and our texts are ancient. And we're becoming a culture that is increasingly seeing itself as moving beyond what
Right.
came
Doesn't
before
value the
us.
ancient. Okay, so I'm going to push the question then, though, that
Let's
that
do it.
same article pushes. What is, how can we then display the way of Jesus, display the call of resurrection that you love to talk about in a way that is not just rhetoric and is really meaningfully different than just humanistic altruism?
Yeah,
And this is
that.
we promise to be a practical we promise that this
Right,
podcast
right.
is about practical ministry,
See, that's why I think we need a second podcast for this,
right?
because there's some, I would rather give more time than we have right now to that story. But for me, the thoughts that I've been having in response to that article, and just kind of in response to my own life. I think the answer is in some ways a pursuit, a passionate pursuit, of holy love.
Okay. Tell
And
us what
maybe,
you mean by that and start out maybe with the word holy.
yeah, so we got to go with holy, right? So holiness is not something that I talk about enough in my life. Holiness, at least from a biblical standpoint, and probably more often in Old Testament than New Testament, but I don't think that's actually true. Holiness is this idea of separate. Different, set apart. God is holy. It's the most useless word in the Bible because it describes something, but it also doesn't describe something.
It's not particular.
Right, yeah. It's other, as Ken Neller would say, rest in peace, former mentor. And love is, again, a dumbed down word in the English language, but for me, it's that force that pursues life or life-giving practices, or the betterment of others, which again, it's, holy and love are two words. It's almost like social justice. The they both define and also confuse all at the same time. But maybe that's part of the issue is that holiness and love, they're not so much defined as they are experienced.
Okay, so here's a, I would suggest though a definition. I
Well,
think
yeah,
we
because
already have is that
this word
holy
Smith.
in this case, in the problem that we're describing here,
Yeah.
holy to be set apart, maybe it means to be set apart from a conversation that is distracting and we can't win.
I like that. I think that's a really good way of putting it. And I think we need to get over that fear of discussing holiness because for so long it was abused.
And
And it has baggage. It has
maybe
at
we,
least in my life.
yeah, how so?
Just talking about holiness, like I equate it to that guilt trip sermon that tells me that I'm not good enough, that I need to be better and do more. But at the same time, I want to do more. I want to be better. I don't want to guilt people into pursuing holy lifestyles. I think that's where the kind of the love of it all comes in. It's a relational,
Yeah, you're talking about when holiness is limited to behavior modification.
Right. And when it's the paddle that smacks you over the head, that wasn't holy. Don't do that. Christians are holy. Stop doing that. No.
And there is a set apartness to having different behavior, sure. But sure. I feel like these questions are always have to be viewed through a missional lens. Mm. What I mean is, what is the...
Speaking of rhetoric.
Yes. Sorry, I can't stop. But no, like, what is the need in our culture? Where is the space where we can uniquely, for this time and place, represent Jesus?
Right.
And if our problem is a hateful dialogue that keeps us from treating people like they're made in the image of God, that keeps us from having real conversations, then perhaps, we have a podcast, I have a blog, I may be part of the problem, but maybe what it means to be holy in our circumstance is to pull away from these conversations.
Yeah.
And I would even say pull into a local conversation.
Hmm.
Rather than saying, making a statement about a church's or a denomination's view on a certain subject, let's talk about the human, the person. What's my view of Joe? What's my view of Sally, and the things that they're going through? That's really different. Yeah. And that is set apart, because then we're not talking about the issues, and you can't use a hashtag for it because you're dealing with real people.
Hashtag no hashtag.
Hashtag no hashtag.
No, and I think that's true. There's this, and there's nothing wrong with this. There's this human desire mm-hmm. to be a part of bigger things. That's why hashtags are so important.
Yeah.
And why they grew so, because it helps us be a part of this bigger collective story. But one of the ways that we move into a third way, I guess, is to stop trying to be a movement. It's to mm-hmm. stop trying to be big and like, well, you know, that's the narrative that they're selling. Great. It's not the narrative I'm selling. Mm-hmm. And the only way that you can see that is by living that out with others.
Yeah.
And the problem with this is it's not shiny, it's not bright, it doesn't make a good book, it won't sell, mm-hmm. It probably won't be a news story, and that should be okay with us.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll just throw out some ideas that I have as, like, just we need to do whatever we can to be concerned first with serving the people directly around us,
right.
The people in our church and our neighbors. That needs to take more energy and more time in our daily life than these issues do. And I'm not saying don't read the newspaper, but maybe you shouldn't read the newspaper if that's going to keep you from loving your neighbor. Carl Barth would hate me for saying that.
He's dead.
Maybe you don't need to read the newspaper if that's going to actually keep you from knowing and loving people. I'll tell you just a little trick that I did. I started this on Instagram. I ended up doing it on all my social media. I just don't follow anyone that I either, like, my rule is if I see you once a week, I will follow you on Instagram. If I don't, now, like, you are an exception. I've seen many, many pictures of that little blonde guy that hangs out with you and your wife and wants trains. What was that? That is my favorite.
So Isaac, who's two and a half.
Two and a half.
We've talked about Santa, and the other day he's done this like two or three times now, where he will just yell out, "Santa, trains, Santa!" Because we tell him, ask Santa for trains for Christmas, and so he's embraced that whole Santa knows everything. I can just talk to Santa, wherever I am, whenever I am. If I can teach him to believe that about God and us, feeling like kind of a failure as a parent.
And a podpaster.
And a podcast. My podcaster cred is going down in this story.
Oh,
but it's so adorable.
I just, I love it. Just like, I just watch him like outside shaking his fists at
the
heavens.
He kind of raises his arms and he talks.
Bring me trains, Santa.
And he's, you know, he's got that like,
Love it. But no, like really just whatever you can do to focus on the conversations. I think I mentioned this on here before. I have a spreadsheet. It's everyone who's attended our church in the last 3 or 4 months and when the last time I had coffee or lunch with them. I just try to have a reminder. That sounds super perfunctory. If anyone at Mustard Seed is offended by that, I'm sorry. But hey, I bought you a taco. So sorry. I try to limit my social media to people I actually interact with. I try to put some tent poles every week in these people and addressing the problems in their lives. And it's a bit of mental gymnastics, but learning how I feel like that is our call right now, is to be more concerned with those lives than hypothetical lives on the internet.
Right. Yeah. I like that. And I try to listen more to, I've only been here 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to have more meals with different people. Each Sunday we try to alternate between Sunday meal with a family versus Sunday meal with our family. You gotta have rest. But the biggest way I'm trying to change my focus right now is just prayer. And you know, it's a dumb and simple thing. It's not super flashy, or anything, but I do, however, use my, this makes me feel bad. I have prayer alerts on my phone, so it reminds me to pray about a certain topic throughout the day.
Wow.
So I have an alert because I get busy and so I don't just pray for one thing. Have separate times to be more local focused.
Mm-hmm.
And that has helped me. One, I don't know how, I don't post as much on social media as I used to. Probably I'm still on it a lot. Just reading up on other people's lives. But I'm trying to avoid certain conversations in public if I possibly can, or at least in social media if I possibly can. Because every time I try, like with the story I mentioned earlier, I just feel like it dies.
Yeah.
This is not the place to have good, healthy conversation.
Mm-hmm.
This is the place to spout our opinions and ideas about things that we already believe to be true.
Right.
But it's not a place where hearts or minds are changed because it's inherently unphysical.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think hearts are changed in unphysicality. I could be wrong about that. I'm not saying it's not helpful. I'm not saying social media is better to get rid of it. I'm just saying that my very limited experience over the last, 8 years with this stuff is that this is where good conversation goes to die.
But isn't this where what Christianity is all about? I mean, Christmas, we're recording this on December 9th. For those on the liturgical calendar, we're approaching the third week of Advent, and what makes Christmas so important is because we believe that God wanted to have these conversations in the flesh with us.
Okay, I see what you just said there. I was confused by what you meant by that, but yes, I agree. That is, the incarnation is such a powerful thing. And it's why the church exists. It's to incarnate that which is not yet physical, but which is coming. But we get distracted. We get lost with our own bamboozles.
Well, let me try it. We've said a lot of things. Let me try to summarize. There used to be a time in America where certain assumptions could be made about Christianity. And most of our organizations, institutions, churches, denominations were created in that time where there was a basic understanding of Christianity and a basic leaning toward it. And that's changed because of a million things, but pluralism is one of the biggest ones. And now Christianity is one voice of many. And the way that some people have responded to that has been to get kind of defensive.
Yeah.
And the problem is that there are many kind and beautiful things happening in the culture that end up not being associated with Jesus, but end up being associated against Jesus, just in the common rhetoric.
Yeah.
And what we're suggesting is that this is a fight that maybe cannot be won.
Yeah.
Online. this is a fight that can only be addressed in relationships, dealing with problems on a local level, and maybe holy living in post-Christendom, in our time and space, means committing to relationships on a level that doesn't necessarily happen outside of the church.
Yeah, I would agree with all that. And I still think we should have a follow-up podcast. I think we could say a lot more, and I think we should say a lot more. But yeah, I like that. And I think we've said that before. We probably said this before.
That's okay.
Fine.
I think it is the great fight of my day.
Right. And I like that. I like what you said, though. I don't think we can win this. And I don't think we really want to win this, to be honest with you. I think this is what we should be trying to win.
Totally. Well, hey, let's just call it quits right there. Kyle, how can people get a hold of us?
Well, you can get a hold of us by calling us on our phone numbers that, if you don't have, we're not giving to you over a podcast.
Except that one time you did.
Except for that one time. You can also reach us on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Like our page. You can subscribe to us on iTunes. And you can share this podcast with your friends.
Yeah.
Who might want to be interested in that. So you can email us. You can follow us on Twitter. I think my Twitter name is Shamgar333 or Shamgar334. It's one of those.
I'm just Chris Morton 82. Yeah, I don't have any obscure Old Testament references.
Yeah. I'm 334 on Instagram, but I think I'm 333 on Twitter because I have to be difficult.
Thanks.
But you can follow us on there. Not that I don't tweet all that often, because I'm trying to. I'm becoming very anti-social media.
But that being said, if you want to talk to us, and we will talk back to you, you know.
We will. We will.
Despite everything we just said, we will.
Right. We will. Awesome. We'll talk to people who reach out to us.
And if nothing else, just teargasandgumdrops.com. You can see all of our past episodes. All right. Well, this was fun.
Good time.
We still have some listeners after this.
Yeah. And if you want us to clarify anything about our political feelings, we will not do that in public. Not like that. Dun, 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 dun.